Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for this first week of April. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and today I'll be talking with Ali Redman, the aquarist for the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, and James Swanson, an AmeriCorps volunteer at the Marine Science Center who works as an educator in the marine exhibit. Some of you may remember Ali Redman was a guest on Nature Now exactly a year ago when we talked about what an aquarist actually did and some of the challenges of her job. You can hear the podcast from that program by going to KPTZ's website. Search for program number 306, or just go back a year in the podcast files. Today, we'll talk about some of the changes at the Marine Exhibit. They're just in time for its spring opening on Friday, April 6th. And we'll learn about some of the expanded opportunities to learn more about the intriguing sea life around us and efforts to conserve ecosystems of the Salish Sea. But first, as always, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, I came upon this mystery sound as I was visiting a friend over the weekend when I heard this exuberant and lush song bursting from a bush in her yard. Do you know what it is? We'll come back to this mystery sound near the end of today's program. Now let's have a quick look at sort of observation and news of our area, and I'm going to ask Allie and James to help out. So, James.
According to the folks at Orca Network, the southern resident killer whales have been scarce lately, but the marine mammal-eating bigs or transient killer whales are showing up all around the Salish Sea, including two major lines traveling together that checked out Hood Canal last week. 10 or so gray whales, locally called the Sounders, have been feeding on shrimp buried in the mudflats of Saratoga Passage and Possession Sound just east of Whidbey Island.
Over the past 6 weeks or so, a big, beautiful male sperm whale has been exploring the inland waters of British Columbia and the northern parts of the Salish Sea. Recent sightings near Nanaimo and the Canadian Gulf Islands may suggest that he is about to explore more of our nearby waters.
And back on land, while walking along the Spruce Railroad Trail that's on the north side of Lake Crescent, Wendy Feltham spotted a number of early-blooming wildflowers, including maiden blue-eyed Marys, Oregon boxwood, rusty hair saxifrage by the dozens on a moist cliff, also covered in mosses and broad-leafed stonecrop, chocolate or checker lilies, which are spectacular plants to look at, and western sweet coltfoot that was blooming by a waterfall.
Stephen Cunliffe spotted 8 turkey vultures ketling over Fort Warden last week. By the way, ketling is a term that birders use to describe a group of birds wheeling and circling in the air.
It is still not too late to watch snow geese on the Skagit Flats. Last weekend, Bruce Marston reported seeing over 3,000 snow geese near Padilla Bay on the northeast side of Indian Slough.
And lastly, Al Latham from just south of Chimicum reports that the rain gauge at his weather station recorded 3.3 inches of rain in March. His 30-year average is 3.8 inches for March. In contrast, another weather station here in Port Townsend recorded just 1.9 inches. And I will say my rough-and-ready rain gauge in my front yard recorded 2.5 inches in North Beach. The NOAA Climate Prediction Center prognosticates that April will have normal temperatures with a little more rain than usual. So that's what's going on. So now let's talk with Allie and James. I happen to know that the Port Townsend Marine Science Center received a very nice grant from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife to update the marine exhibit. And when I dropped by last week, I became really excited about some of the changes. So Allie, let's talk a bit about the visual changes in a few minutes. But first, can you share what your overall goals for this project are and what you hope visitors will experience and learn?
As always at the Marine Science Center, our mission is to inspire conservation of the Salish Sea. And that's something that we really focus on any time that we make changes to the exhibit or think about how we might want to proceed in the future or what we're doing now. It's something we think about every day when we go into work. How can we do better to inspire people to conserve the Salish Sea? In this exhibit now, we're switching from a species level to a more habitat and ecosystem level understanding, trying to get across to people not just who lives here in the Salish Sea, but what are the ecosystems, how all of that works together, what are the different habitat types.
So does that mean the different tanks and touch pools will be different habitats?
So what we've tried to do is reconfigure it so that each aquarium or touch tank represents a different nearshore habitat. So habitats that are pretty much within the light zone where light can still reach. Mm-hmm. There's still seaweeds and algae growing and seagrasses. And we have each tank kind of representing a different part of that ecosystem.
So give me some examples.
So we're really excited to now have a tank that centers on the kelp forest habitat. Mm-hmm. Now, we're still fairly small, so this is a very small kelp forest. But that's one of our newer features is the mm-hmm. kelp forest. I'm very excited about that. Eelgrass is all around us at Fort Worden. So, of course, we have not just one, but two tanks featuring mm-hmm. the eelgrass habitat, as that is one of our richest habitats locally and one that we're very interested in and concerned about. We also are focusing a little bit more on Olympia oysters. Do you like to eat oysters, Nan?
Well, I do, actually.
Have you tried the Olympia oysters?
I never have had the pleasure.
Well, they are a hot new thing, both in restoration, or an old thing, I should say, because they are, in fact, the only oyster native to mm-hmm. the area. The one we're more used to, the Pacific oyster, it's actually from the Asian yeah. side of the Pacific, not
our
side.
And those are the
side.
Bigger ones.
So those are the ones we're used to, and because of the name, many of us get fooled into thinking they are, in fact, mm-hmm. native to the area. The Olympia oyster is making a nice comeback, both in terms of commercial industry and in restoration. Even here in Jefferson County, we have some great projects happening with Olympia oysters. Got some nice projects happening in the Discovery Bay area and also down in the Quilcene and Daybob areas.
So folks are actually going to be able to see an Olympia oyster bed, I guess, up close.
It's a really, really
tiny
small
bed,
version
but
of
okay,
that.
Yeah.
Right now it features a dozen oysters.
Okay.
We'll at least be able to show people the differences between the Olympia and the Pacific oyster. Mm-hmm. And of course, what we're excited about isn't just the oyster itself, but that the habitat that that represents and the ecosystem services that that habitat provides for all of us.
So I think I know that the habitat for the Olympic oyster is a little different than that for the Pacific oyster. Is that right?
It's a little bit different. To most people, it's going to seem like more or less mm-hmm. the same habitat. I think if you're really an oyster person, you're going to be more aware of the slight differences mm-hmm. between the two of them. But both of them tend to be estuary and species, okay. intertidal.
Now, tell me a bit. I'm intrigued by the kelp forest. What kind of critters are you going to expect to have in there?
One of the interesting problems that we encounter in aquariums versus in the real habitats is trying to make sure that we can both show the different elements of a trophic cascade or a food web without necessarily having that food web go full circle in our tanks.
As in, you don't want everybody to eat everybody else. Or
it makes
like
it
that.
A little
yeah.
bit harder if everybody keeps on eating everybody else. So we have some of our kelp elements split out into a few different tanks. So we're keeping our, for instance, our sunflower stars, mm-hmm. voracious eaters, need to be kept separate from the rest because they would just eat everything up. But in the kelp forest tank itself right now, we have shiner perch, rockfish, kelp greenling, kelp crabs, sea cucumbers. We would have the sunflower stars, but they have to be separated mm-hmm. out. Some of the urchins, of course.
Interesting. So in addition to having to be aware of how sort of food webs actually work, are there other challenges that you're discovering as you're kind of restructuring and reorganizing the exhibit to be based on habitat types?
There is always exciting challenges in the aquarium world in terms of just making sure that you've got all of your parameters correct. I mean, we are basically taking animals out of a water environment and putting them in a land environment, except for, of course, providing them with all of the water. So there's always a lot of challenges in terms of just making sure we have good flows, good sediment types, and making sure that those animals are happy and comfortable in the aquarium. Mm-hmm.
So, question about the exhibit. You mentioned the different habitat types. Are all the habitat types from around here? I mean, are they all essentially local? And the creatures, the plants and animals, are they collected locally?
Yes to both of those things. The habitat types are all found here locally. I think all of them can be found within Jefferson County themselves. A lot of these habitats are right around us also at the Protection Island Aquatic Preserve and other aquatic preserves in the area. And all of our animals are collected locally.
How has the exhibit changed visually?
I think the most obvious thing when you walk into this space is that we've just kind of spruced it up a little bit, given it a fresh coat of paint, tried to really make the features that visitors for years have been knowing and loving just really pop more. So the touch tanks are all still there. All of the tanks are still there. The murals are just more beautiful than ever. And I'm really excited to hear from visitors what they think about the space as they come back in. And I'm really, really looking forward to hearing people who have seen us throughout our 35 years of development and change let us know what they think about our newest incarnation.
Well, and you know, one of the things that impressed me so much is just the background you put in on the wall tanks. So that makes the organisms in there just stand out. I just loved it. Just a very simple change, just background rather than the clear back of the tank. So for someone who has visited the aquarium in the past, what do you think will surprise a visitor this year the most?
I think the thing that's funny is we've had volunteers and other people coming in through previews to look at it in advance. People keep being surprised by the things that are actually still there. So like the murals, the biggest reaction they get is that they love the artwork that we've done. Well, no, that artwork was there the whole time.
Well, now, James, let me ask you a few questions. You're an AmeriCorps volunteer this year. Can you first just sort of briefly explain what that means? What is the AmeriCorps? And what does the program here at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center do?
Yeah, so being an AmeriCorps, you're a community service volunteer for, in this example, Port Townsend. And at the Marine Science Center, we focus on environmental education to school programs and the public, focusing on the marine environments. We coordinate education programs, and we are teaching classes all the time. There's sometimes every week we have 5-6 classes. Some weeks we have 0. Mm-hmm. So it's very sporadic, but we're always teaching. As an AmeriCorps, I'm the marine exhibit educator, and there's 3 other positions there and 3 other AmeriCorps at the Marine Science Center. But my position focuses on the animal husbandry and assisting the aquarist, Allie, more. Mm-hmm. All 4 of us have different niches that we fill at the Marine Science Center.
Fun. I happen to know that you grew up in the Midwest, and so did I. And like you, I knew from the time I was quite the small youngster that I really wanted to be near the ocean, to live near the beach and the mountains, and to be part of this sort of maritime world. So I've got to ask you, what excites you about the experience you've been having this year here at Port Townsend?
Everything.
Everything, okay.
Everything is so different from home. The salt water here, all the animals. Like the first time I walked out on that pier, I just looked down and there was moon jellies all over and there was anemones on the pilings, and all these things were just so new to me and I didn't even know what to name some of them. Like it was just like, whoa, look at that thing. I had to, you know, come up with my own name almost because I had never seen it before.
Well, I have a naturalist friend who says that's a very good way to learn creatures, is to come up with your own name. Eventually you'll learn the right name, but to use a name that means something to you. Well, amongst the newness, have you learned anything about the marine world that just completely took you by surprise?
I think out here, what really took me by surprise the most is how extreme the tides are and how much that really determines the life out here.
Mm-hmm.
I have been around the ocean in the past in different areas, like in Hawaii, and they don't have very extreme tides at all. So that just baffles my mind, the extreme tides out here and how these animals have adapted to survive to that. So I think that's probably the most surprising, shocking
thing. So I think that's a topic for another conversation, because it is interesting.
Yeah.
And James, as you think about the changes you've seen in the marine exhibit this year, what do you think might be the most popular amongst the kids that visit?
That's a hard one. Kids like lots of different things, but I think the plankton station is going to be one of the more popular things among the kids, because they get hands-on and get to see the plankton and look into microscopes, and probably never have had the chance to look into a microscope. Also, the touch tanks are always a big hit with the kids, because they get to be hands-on with those animals, and sometimes they haven't seen any of them ever, and they're scared of them, so it's fun to get them comfortable with them and actually help them think about why they've adapted that way and stuff.
So do you have a personal favorite at the marine exhibit?
Right now it would be the kelp forest tank, because we just got it running and it looks so good. And I just love watching all the fish hide in the kelp and how they all just blend in with the background. It's really cool.
That makes me want to go out there right now. I guess the final question I want to ask you is, if a visitor could leave the experience at the aquarium with just one message, just one takeaway, what do you hope that would be?
All these habitats we're displaying are connected to each other, even though they're not the same habitat. Mm-hmm. They all have a purpose and are connected to each other, and we as humans are just as connected as the fish are to them.
That's a great answer. Yeah. So, Allie, now back to you. I know there is a new addition at the marine exhibit, and I think James just referenced it, and that's the conservation laboratory. What is it? What's going to go on there?
Very excited about the conservation lab. There are so many wonderful projects happening in the Salish Sea area that are looking at restoration, monitoring, conservation. There are so many people that are out there working hard, professionals, citizen scientists, just trying to make our world a better place. And we wanted to be able to highlight some of those activities, make sure people were informed, to be able to tell that positive story of the good things that are happening and how people can get involved in those good things. And so our conservation lab is the space that we created to be able to really focus on that story of what are the great things that are happening and how to be part of that. We'll be focusing some different projects over the few years. This year, very excited to be working closely with Puget Sound Restoration Fund, focusing on the northern or pinto abalone and also the California sea cucumbers.
So you're going to be raising them right there?
We are going to have a kind of a mini hatchery set up, and we're going to be raising some cucumbers and juvenile abalones right there. People will be able to come and get an idea of what it might be like to support or to work at one of these hatcheries. One of the things that I'm really excited about as well is that we are moving our plankton microscope to create more of a plankton station, which will be part of our new conservation lab. We had an idea to get little lab coats, and so the kids get to put on little lab coats when they do both the plankton station and then come into the conservation lab. Well, there'll be some activities for them as well, and they get to dress up and see what it might feel like to pursue a career in a conservation
So could
science.
Visitors of all ages, like those of us who might be young at heart, participate?
You're all welcome to come and participate. Of course, we are all about a hands-on experiential learning.
We could chat some more, and it would be most fun just to be down there looking at things today, but we're not. One last thing, Allie. You were telling me before we started the program about a special event, Citizen Science Day, which you said is on Saturday, April the 14th. So what is it? What's happening? What are you doing?
So Citizen Science Day is a big event. It's happening all over the place, but the Marine Science Center is doing a special event for that day as well. We are doing a bio blitz. Some of your listeners might already be familiar with the iNaturalist website and app, and it's a way of documenting what they might see, especially through photography. And so we are going to do a 24-hour event where we document everything that we can find in the Fort Worden area, and we want everybody to come down and help out with that. And they can find out more about the event on our website, which is ptmsc.org.
That sounds like great fun. So thanks so much, Allie and James. Let's see, we need to hear that mystery sound again. Well, that enthusiastic and energetic call is from a male Buick's wren. This little bird has been described as a, quote, noisy, hyperactive little bird with bold white eyebrows. And for a wren, it has a relatively long tail that it flicks as it hops from branch to branch. Only the male Buick wren sings. Songs vary from one geographical area to another. And a single male can possess a repertoire of 9 to 22 distinct songs. A young male Buick's wren learns to sing from neighboring adult males while he's coming of age, and the songs he develops differ from his father and from his neighbors. They change a note here and there and a syllable here and there. So the melodious signature of a particular Buick's wren is actually unique to it and develops in that first month or two of when they're young birds. Let's look at some upcoming events again with Allie and James's help. Well, it certainly must be spring. Many field trips are starting to pop out around us. Admiralty Audubon is offering a Saturday bird walk at Fort Flagler on April the 7th and another bird walk around Anderson Lake on April the 14th. And then in addition to their regular Wednesday morning bird walks, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is hosting a field trip again on April the 7th to Cary Blake Park just east of Sequim. And also on April the 7th, there's a backyard birder class at the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society's Dungeness River Center. Check the web pages for both Admiralty Audubon and the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society.
If you are inspired by the opportunity to help restore native habitat, the Jefferson Land Trust has a special event at the Illahi Preserve on Saturday, April 7th. The Land Trust has a very special new volunteer, Jacob, who has taken on stewardship at Illahi Preserve as his Eagle Scout project. Come out for a special Saturday work party to help Jacob remove non-native blackberry as the first step to restoring this wildlife area.
The Orca Network is planning a really special weekend on Whidbey Island on April 14th and 15th. It is the Welcome the Whales Parade and Festival weekend. Check their website for more information on all the events that weekend.
And lastly, begin reading Susan Zwinger's book, The Last Wild Edge, for the Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society Book Club gathering Monday, April 23rd. The book beautifully tells the story of one woman's journey from the Arctic Circle to the Olympic Rainforest. Everyone is welcome to participate in their book club. Well, that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observation, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, Thursdays at 5:05 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Marine Science, performed by Curtis Schwartz.